championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we are coming back strong after the top player in the nation in 2022 commits to Texas. Quinn Ewers is the best quarterback recruit to commit to Texas since Vince Young. What does Quinn Ewers do that makes him so special? What is he going to bring to Texas beyond his talent, and how does Texas maximize what Ewers brings to the 2022 class? Man, it's already 2022. I'm feeling old. Then we're going to talk about the 2021 class, this upcoming class, the decommitment of Milroe, the commitments of Jane Alexis, Michael Myselinski, and Gunnar Helm, and also talk about Kamari Wheaton versus LJ Johnson. Texas has a chance at both. Who would you take? Also, again, I said there's a lot going on here. The NCAA just passed out a ruling saying players won't lose a year of eligibility for the 2020 season. How does this affect future rosters, and how does this affect the 2020 season in general? And then the last thing we're going to talk about is Texas, specifically practice reports, who's standing out, and how does that affect what Texas will look like in the 2020 season? So, Darius, how's it been going, man? You're coaching for DeSoto now in the varsity level. How have practices been with the entire COVID pandemic going on?
Oh, well, it's been full speed ahead for us. We've pretty much been going all summer since the beginning of June. We did have to take a brief hiatus for 2 weeks, the past 2 weeks, due to the Dallas County ordinance or whatever, but that got lifted last Friday. So we've been back at it full steam ahead this week. We start things off with a freshman JV and varsity level. We got South Lake Carroll for our opening scrimmage to get ready in less than a month. We're preparing. We're getting ready to pass out pads next week, and we're rolling full speed ahead, man. So we're having a football season look like, and all the school and everything is being done online.
Right. And like you said, your first opponent, or I guess scrimmage, is South Lake Carroll. So you'll be able to see Texas's newest commit up close and personal. Quinn Ewers, the number one quarterback and number one player composite-wise in the nation, committed to Texas almost out of the blue. We kind of knew about it a few weeks beforehand, but it really came to a head last week when he committed to Texas over Oklahoma. So it's a big recruiting win for Texas over Lincoln Riley and the Oklahoma Sooners. What does Ewers bring to the field that makes him so special to be the top quarterback recruit for Texas since the Vince Young?
Well, it is early. I mean, a lot can change between now and the time he gets on campus. But the thing that really stands out the most about Ewers, he's already about 6'2 and a half, 6 foot three. I'd say he's probably about 190 pounds. And South Lake Carroll is a team we lost to last season, to end our season. So I saw Ewers up close and personal last year and the year before that when he was a freshman playing on their JV. So I'm very, very familiar with him. So first things first, it's a great system at South Lake Carroll. You know, the head coach is Riley Dodge. They've got a few former college coaches over there. He gets great coaching. There's no question about that. He plays in a great system. But if you watch his highlights or a South Lake game in general, you know, generally he has a lot of time back there in the pocket. But at the same time, I know at DeSoto, we're a man coverage team and we were trying to heat him up. We were bringing pressure. And that kid, he doesn't flinch in the face of with guys in his face. He stares down the barrel. And he delivers strikes over and over and over. And he's also more athletic. Even though he's considered, I believe he's rated as a pocket passer on all the sites, he is athletic enough to get outside of the pocket and make things happen with his feet. And he'll be able to keep the defense honest with his legs. So he's on video outrunning defenses from South Grand Prairie, outrunning the defense from Den Geyer for 60-70-yard touchdown. So, I think he's a total package. I saw Matt Stafford when he was a senior. I didn't get to see Garrett Gilbert play in high school. I didn't get to see Kyler Murray play in high school. To this point, as far as sophomores go, he's as impressive quarterback as I've seen to this point. And you just can't teach his poise and what he does in the pocket at such a young age.
Right, and he's being compared right now to Trevor Lawrence. And now Trevor Lawrence – was probably the highest rated recruit ever. He was above a 1.00 composite rating when he left high school. I don't think Quinn Ewers will quite be to that level in terms of recruiting rating. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he does absolutely blow up even more than he did. But Trevor Lawrence is sort of the comparison I think of when I watch Ewers tape, especially with those runs. I think of that run against Ohio State that Trevor Lawrence pulled off for that touchdown. That's what I see when I see Ewers out in the open field. What I see, obviously, in his arms is a cannon of an arm, ability to make something out of nothing, that improvisational ability that you look for in a quarterback these days. Obviously, as you said, he's got the prototype body, he's got the frame and everything, and he's got great touch, like you said. He is just everything that you want in a quarterback and more. Now, we'll see, obviously, he's going into his junior year if this continues, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know, because at one point, Zach Evans was the number one player in the nation. He was just a sophomore last year. He's going to be a junior this year. I don't want to get too hyped up about this, but at the same time, let's go ahead and start drinking Kool-Aid and talk about what Ewers brings to Texas beyond his talent, because the fact that he's talented is well documented. But what does he bring to Texas beyond the talent? And what he brings is the potential for Texas to have an elite team. Darius, you and I were talking about this before the show, but when I've been studying the Texas and Oklahoma rivalry and listening to podcasts like Sports Wars and reading the charts of Bill Connelly and his S&P Plus throughout the years, the one thing that I've seen that's very, very blatant is Oklahoma is a very consistent team. They're very consistently good. Texas is a boom and bust team, but when they boom, it is far and beyond better than Oklahoma has had. You're talking about that 2005 team. You're talking about the 1980s teams. You're talking about the wishbone offenses. It's stuff like that. Texas has just, when it comes to S&P Plus and, you know, advanced numbers back it up, they just go to another level. That's what Ewers brings Texas. The ability to achieve that high ceiling, that boom team. Now, what you need to do to get that boom team is to maximize the players around Ewers, right? You need to make sure that he's put into the right system, because Darius and I, before the show, we went through all the quarterbacks that were rated in the top 20 from 2018 all the way into 2001. There are 30 quarterbacks that were rated in the top 20 nationally in their class. 30% of those did not bust. So you have a 30% chance of a hit rate on a decent quarterback. So we're talking quarterbacks like Matthew Stafford or Mark Sanchez, JT Daniels, Chad Henne, Terrell Pryor. Now there's a 10% chance that you hit on a big-time quarterback, an all-time player, a player like Vince Young, Jameis Winston, or Trevor Lawrence. Now, at top 10, that goes up just like 1% more. You get 31% chance of a hit rate. Now, even though that's probably the best odds of getting an all-time talent, that's still a 70% chance you miss. So the possibility is there. What is a contributing factor to those misses is, honestly, players being put into the wrong systems or not having the correct talent around them. Let's look, for example, at one of those busts, which is Garrett Gilbert. Darius, you can speak to this more than I can. What was the reason Garrett Gilbert busted at Texas?
Garrett Gilbert busted at Texas because after Texas lost to Alabama in the national championship game in which Colt McCoy got knocked out in the first quarter, Garrett Gilbert came in as a true freshman after pretty much sitting on the bench the entire season. I think he only got, one series the whole year prior to that. I think he threw for two or three touchdowns in the second half against Alabama. Right. But because Texas lost to Alabama and I want to say Mark Ingram probably ran for like 90 yards and Trent Richardson ran for probably about 130, 140. The narrative was that Alabama physically wore Texas down and physically dominated Texas in the second half of that ball game with their run game. That was the narrative. I don't know how much common knowledge it is, but Mack Brown is not a fan of Nick Saban. in response to that, we came in my freshman year. All of a sudden, Texas went away from the is no longer really taking shotgun snaps running the zone read. It's more of an under the center with a fullback, you know, trying to come downhill power. And the thing is, you know, Texas pretty much radicalized college football with the zone read with Vince Young in 2004, 2005. And that system worked for them with Colt McCoy. So from 2003 until 2009, Texas ran a system that worked for them, and they went away from that. And the thing is, when you see success in a sport like football, right, or any sport, when you see a success with a system, what happens? Everybody copies it, right? So all of the high schools in Texas are now running zone read spread concepts. Their linemen are now zone blocking instead of blocking man-to-man, one-on-one, trying to power guys out of the way. And where does Texas, Texas's recruiting base is what? State of Texas. So all of your recruits are on offense are used to zone and, you know, things like that, more of a finesse style. And all of a sudden, in the span of what, 15 practices in the spring, you thought you could change all of that. And that's how you get 5-7. Garrett Gilbert ran a spread zone type offense at Lake Travis. You went away from things everybody had known, what players had been conditioned to do for the last 4 or 5 years of their football lives. You took that away and then wonder why it didn't work. So I don't blame Garrett Gilbert at all for that. But it goes back to your point of even though guys are rated a certain thing and have this X amount, somebody can be so talented, it's still on the coaching staff to put that guy and, you know, those guys, all the players, in the best position to be successful.
Right. And that means putting them into either a system that will work for them, coaching them up into your system, or, you know, it's actually, screw that. You need to put them into a system they're comfortable with. If you have an all-time player or supposedly an all-time player, you want to mold your system to fit that player and then build up players around that player that will help make sure that opponents can't sell out to stop what makes that special player so special, right? You need to be able to have guys be comfortable in their system. So if we look at, right, the Garrett Gilbert example here, Garrett Gilbert was a, as you said, a zone read spread option quarterback. The players that Mac Brown's recruited around him, zone read spread players, and then you put them into a position that they're uncomfortable with. The players underneath Garrett Gilbert can't maximize or can't do what they need to do to make sure that Garrett Gilbert is able to succeed like he was able to in the national championship as a true freshman, even though, yeah, he threw a bunch of picks, but he was a true freshman thrown into a national championship game, and he held his own. There was something there. So, and then you look at Vince Young and what they brought with him. Now, Vince Young, generational talent, just like Quinn Ewers, but you bring in an offensive tackle like Justin Blaylock. You give him a flex tight end who can be a guy who Vince Young dumps it down to when he's in trouble. And David Thomas was incredibly valuable during the entire 2005-2004 seasons for Vince Young. You give him one tall wide receiver who can beat guys one-on-one in line with Swede, and then you have that team. You have guys who surround Vince Young so that people can't just say, okay, we're sending 11 hats to Vince Young every play, right? Because you're going to get neutralized by Justin Blaylock or Casey Studdard. You got the run game in Jamal Charles and Ramontz Taylor, or you can throw it up to guys like Limus Sweden, Billy Pittman. That's what you had in that 2005, in that 2002 class, is a class that was built around a system with players to fit that system. And that was the difference between that class and the classes in 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012 that were 1-2s, right? You have a chance to get that 1-2 class in this 2022 class. So, Darius, knowing what makes you so special, how would you maximize this 2022 class?
Well, what getting a guy like Ewers does is guys who may have been considering Texas, but like, let's do Zach Evans, for example. They always had Texas around. You know, he was showing some attention, but, you know, the serious ball, the real ball is, you know, the guys that are in the playoff. Well, what that does is it gives guys, you know, it kind of gets guys' attention because Ewers was considering for the longest. People were thought he was going to Oklahoma. And the other school was what, Ohio State, LSU? teams that are in the football, college football playoff all the time. When he committed to Texas and talking to some 2022 guys, they really opened their eyes and said, wait a minute. So Texas is still cool. It still is the move, maybe. We can still make something happen there. And what he does is he opens some doors that may not have been, that may have been shut the last 5 or 6 years the way Texas has played. So guys like Caleb Burton, who is an Austin area guy, you know, he's going to give Texas a harder look now. Ewers is friends with Louisville wide receiver Armani Winfield, who is a guy that for the longest I've thought would end up at Oklahoma, but apparently Ewers' commitment really, really got his attention there. I think I even saw a crystal ball for Winfield come in. Same thing with a guy like Jalen Gilbo, running back Jaden Blue from Klein Kane. Like, yeah, it gives Texas opportunity. So just like Texas had the opportunity coming off of the Sugar Bowl win with Georgia, what is that, a year ago, 2 years ago, there was excitement looking towards this 2021 class. Like, you know, Texas can really capitalize on this if they have another good season. It sets Texas up to have an opportunity to really capitalize if they can do something this year on the field. If they don't, I also think that, you know, it could also have the same effect like we're kind of seeing now, is that they can see that momentum teeter off a little bit. But he gives them an opportunity that they haven't had, and it's an opportunity to really jumpstart this the rebuilding process that's already been happening. He gives them a chance to take it to the next level.
Right. Isn't there another wide receiver, five-star wide receiver, that is now thinking about Texas?
I think you may be thinking about Evan Stewart. Is that Frisco? Yeah, he does like Texas as well. Frisco Liberty, Evan Stewart.
Right. And then there's a bunch of offensive tackles. Will Campbell, who's now more heavily considering Texas.
Yeah, I'll believe a top Louisiana guy chooses Texas over LSU when I see it.
But it's, again, it's opened up the door for a lot of players and a lot of potential momentum in a maximized class around yours, a class that is built on what Tom Herman is focusing on, which is a power spread. I guess for yours, it would be a more pass heavy offense that also has that power run game. And you have a stable of running backs that will come in before him, with Bijan Robinson should still be there. You're going to have, in this 2021 class, potentially Kamar Wheaton or LJ Johnson, on top of Jonathan Brooks, who is not half bad either. Nothing to, you know, thumb your nose at there. What I think they need is, and obviously they're stacking up in these hybrid tight ends that are guys like David Thomas was, but even more of a guys that you can, the guys that you can do more with. Texas is gonna have guys on the field for Quinn Ewers. It sucks that Texas didn't pick up the Brockmeyer so that they could kind of protect Quinn Ewers along the way, but that's what you potentially have in Ewers, and that's the effect he is having on this 2022 class. Darius, any final words on Quinn Ewers that you want to make known about what he does?
I believe he's the real deal. I think Texas is going to end up having a top three national class in 2022. In large part due to having that guy already. And we're forgetting Texas already has Faison Wilson committed, who's also a national top 150 player. So it's already, they're on the right track already. So right. He was just the real deal. He's the real deal.
And it's interesting, the quarterback battle that will happen when he's on campus, or if there will be one, because when he gets to campus, you'll have Jaquindon Jackson or Hudson Card on campus as, what would they be, a junior?
Either juniors or redshirt sophomores. Somebody's going to play this year, though.
And Casey Thompson would have.
He'd be a senior.
He'd be a gone. He'd
a redshirt junior. No, he's a sophomore right now. He would be a redshirt. He could be a fifth-year senior, or he would have transferred already. Somebody would be gone already.
True, but if you get to that point, then that means that you have a quarterback.
Right.
If Casey Thompson's still there. So it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, he sits a year, or if you have a Justin Fields situation there. There's a lot of stuff that can happen between now and then.
That's true.
What if Jaquindon Jackson is the real deal, or Hudson Card is the next coming? We don't know. And right now in practice reports, we'll get to those later, but those two guys are turning heads as freshmen.
I don't know that it would be a big deal. Somebody's going to play this year, meaning that they will be a junior by the time Ewers was a true freshman. He can redshirt his freshman year and then still, you know, see the field in four games and see the field the second year. I don't think it's that big of a deal. because they have a two-year separation there.
Right. It'll be interesting. And another part of the Ewers effect is on the 2021 class. So let's get into that now. The decommitment of Milroe. Now, Milroe, Jalen Milroe, decommitted from Texas and committed to Alabama. And the fact that Ewers committed to Texas isn't the reason Jalen Milroe left, but it did kind of push him. Milroe was out the door, and he kind of pointed to that in his decommitment note, where he said, "Yursich, I know I wasn't your number one guy, or I know I wasn't your guy from the start, but you did a great job of building a relationship with me." But the fact that he wasn't his number one guy from the start, and we talked about it a little bit on the show, not a whole ton, but I was angry about it behind the scenes of, man, Yursich isn't really going with Jalen Milroe here. He's kind of looking around and still trying to poke at other players.
Yeah.
Jalen Milroe saw that, and he was keeping up a kind of a connection, you know, in the background with other schools because, hey, I don't know if this coach really wants me, and do I want to be with a coach that really doesn't want me, right?
Right.
He did a great job while he was committed to Texas. He was a great ambassador. But the fact that they got Quinn Ewers, that Yursich really didn't want him, all that stuff kind of combined to make it make sense for Milroe to say, I'm going to decommit and commit to Alabama.
Yeah, if he was afraid of competition, yeah, Alabama's definitely not. It's not the place you choose. He would have chose Miami or something like that.
Right.
But like you were saying, in my opinion, you know what I mean, I don't know for certain, but just from reading the tea leaves, I'm of the opinion that Milroe and Yursich never did really hit it off. And from there, I believe Milroe was always a little bit shaky, and he was open about that, you know, even though he's solidly committed to Texas, he was going to be a Longhorn. He wasn't going to shut the door on anybody, you know, just in case, because in his own words, things could always change. You never know. And he saw that happen when he saw Tim Beck get replaced. Yeah, it's just a situation where, you know, over your stitches, 7 years being an FBS coach, I think his quarterbacks were, J.W. Walsh, Mason Rudolph for 3 years. What's my man name? Taylor Cornelius. And then this past year, Justin Fields.
He has a type. White, awkward-looking quarterbacks.
yeah. He prefers more of a pocket kind of guy. I mean, he wasn't at Ohio State when they landed the commitment from Justin Fields to transfer. He was at Oklahoma State when they landed Spencer Sanders' commitment. But I went back and looked up some of Spencer Sanders' old interviews, and he never mentioned Yursich not one time. It was always Mike Gundy. So what it also made me realize was, since he's been here, since he came up to the FBS level from Shippensburg, Yursich hasn't never, you know, it's never really been his name on the offense. It was Mike Gundy's offense the whole time he was at Oklahoma State, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this past year at Ohio State, he didn't recruit Justin Fields there, and that was Ryan Day's offense. This is really the first time at Texas that we're really going to see Mike Yursich's offense with him calling the plays exclusively. And what it also opened up in my eyes, I know this is getting a little bit off topic, but it also leaves the door open for Tom Herman to still intervene and call plays like we saw him doing with Tim Beck, if he wants to or sees fit, which raises a little bit of a red flag for me. But yeah, I was interested to come across that and realize that just looking at his history with quarterbacks.
And that makes me think Hudson Card probably has a good shot at becoming the quarterback next year.
Yep.
If that goes down like that. Although Casey Thompson has been under Tom Herman for, 3 years now?
Mm-hmm.
He's probably the guy he would go to next, but Hudson Card seems to be that type of player.
Nah, he's going to get hit with a Garrett Gilbert, Sherrod Harris situation.
Mm-hmm. With Jalen Milroe decommitting, that leaves you with two options. You can either say, all right, 2021, we're not going to go take a quarterback. That gives you the potential to give a scholarship to another position, but it also leaves the door open for, let's say, somebody transfers next year after they don't win the quarterback battle, to have two scholarship quarterbacks and then a third one in Roshan Johnson if you need an emergency quarterback. That leaves you with really two guys who have been your quarterbacks and mainly your quarterbacks next year if one transfers, which it might probably would happen, honestly, unless you can convince a guy like Hudson Card or Jaquinnon Jackson to stick around at quarterback or play a different position.
Yeah, the different position thing is not going to happen.
Right. So my thing on the 2021 classes, they should probably take a guy at quarterback who is an underrated player, a guy who, hey, let's take a shot on this guy. He doesn't have a big head. He believes in himself, and he's a hard worker. We know he'll be a hard worker, and he'll be a team player, right? He's not going to leave at the first time of sign of trouble or the fact that he's not starting.
Yeah, just the only issue becomes, I mean, and this is Texas high school football, too. I mean, you have good quarterbacks, you know, in good systems everywhere. But, you know, quarterbacks commit really early. This is, we got, what, 3 months left, 2 months, 2.5 months left in this class before signing day comes up in December, 3 months, 3.5 months. I just, everybody's committed that, you know, what you would think would be Texas caliber. So do you reach to take a guy that will probably never play just for the sake of having a warm body? I mean, what is the upside in taking a player that you wouldn't have recruited, you know, under normal circumstances, just to say you have one?
Yep.
Especially, you know, in the landscape of college football with all of these grad transfers, you know, you can always find you a transfer somewhere.
Right.
Especially quarterback. I have heard in the case reported on the site that he was in favor of not taking anyone, but I'm under the impression that they definitely want to take a quarterback. Who that guy will be, I don't have an answer for you right now. Duncanville just got a transfer from John Paul II, named Grayson James. Grayson's about 6'1", 200 pounds. He got offers from places like, you know, Texas State, Rice, stuff like that. A player like him getting the opportunity on a bigger stage at a place like Duncanville, you know, playing in this district, playing against IMG Academy. What is that, the second game of the season? Maybe he could be a guy that, you know, breaks out late and, you know, will take a bigger offer. So maybe that's the name. But other than that, just right now, I'm interested to see where they go or where they find it.
Yeah, and again, you bring up a good point of the grad transfer market or just the transfer market, right? Since the NCAA is going to be allowing for one free transfer, you could probably get that if, you know, you get to the spring season, you go through spring ball, and then one guy's like, hey, I'm not going to make this. I'm transferring out and finding another place where I could play. And, you know, more power to them. But that gives you a chance to be like, hey, we need a guy, maybe an FCS player who could blow up at the next level to come and try out for Texas or something like that and see what happens there. And that gives you some depth for the year and a security blanket, given that Tom Herman's quarterbacks usually don't make it through a full season. So that's that with Jalen Milroe. It really sucks to lose a guy like that and the pull that he has in the Houston area and just the 2021 class in general. I don't know if there's going to be a huge loss of guys.
Let me interrupt you real quick. Where is the big pull that we saw from Milroe in Houston?
Yeah,
not,
you're right.
Not to be, you know, negative or anything like that, but who did he pull? You know?
You're right. I mean, he really didn't pull too many guys, but he was a good leader. He was a good guy. He was a good face for the class. He was a good voice of the class. And now you don't have that anymore, and it sucks. It does, but you're trading that for Quinn Ewers and hopefully a good Mike Yurcich offense.
You take that trade.
Yeah. So the next thing that happened in the 2021 class while we were away is three commitments. You have Jaden Alexis, Mike Myselinski, and Gunnar Helm. So let's start off with Jaden Alexis, the latest to commit for the 2021 class, the wide receiver out of Florida. Darius, what is Texas getting out of this kid?
So Jaden Alexis, his dad, Rich Alexis, played in the NFL for 7 or 8 years, mostly with the Seattle Seahawks. He's a guy. Jaden is a guy that's about 6 feet tall, probably about 185 pounds. But he's got, if you look at his frame, he's got a close to like a running back type of build, kind of like his dad. He's a guy that I think will eventually have inside outside versatility. Although I think he will start his career off inside for Texas. He's a guy that you can throw the ball, get the ball out to in space. In a way, think of a bigger version of a little bit of Dejon Harrison. You see Alexis on tape making plays, making guys miss in space, making sharp cuts, and then taking it to the house. He's a guy with verified laser 4.41 40-yard dash speed, and I think he's got a 100-meter personal best of 10.7 seconds. So he's got legit speed. He's got NFL bloodlines. But he's also a guy that's the class captain of at his high school. So he's apparently a high character kid off the field too. So he's a win all around. I think Alexis could eventually, especially under Andre Coleman's tutelage, be a guy that ends up logging some serious snaps over his time at Texas, in my opinion.
What do you think about him in comparison to what is in the state right now in 2021? Where would he fall in Texas? Because it's a bit of a down year. You have some good talent, good-looking guys at the top, but there's not much in between. Where would Jaden fit in Texas?
I think Jaden Alexis falls into that tier of guys like Baylor commit Hal Presley, like Texas Tech commit Jaron Bradley, like Oklahoma State commit Bryson Green. I think he's in that, Latrell Neville. I think he's in that tier, tier three, 2.5 type of deal. He's not in the same class, in my opinion, as like a JoJo Earl or J. Michael Sturdivant or anything like that. But I think he's a good player. If he was in the state of Texas, he would be a top 60, top 50 player overall. He's a 4-star player on Rivals and on 247. Again, he's a solid pickup. I like Alexis, especially compared to what was available to be able to get him this late.
Right. Yeah, it's a good pickup by Texas, a good pickup by Andre Coleman, and hopefully Andre Coleman is the developer that he appears to be. So the next guy you have is Michael Mysolinski, sort of the James Brockermeyer backup, right? You have Miles Mysolinski, who is a center in Florida. What do you expect out of Michael Mysolinski?
So Mysolinski is another guy like Alexis. Father played in the NFL for almost 10 years. Dad is currently the strength and conditioning coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So he's a kid that has been around the game his entire life. He's had access to training and former players and knowledge of the game that 99% of kids don't get. So in a lot of ways, and he's a kid that's about 6'2.5", 6'2", about 275, 280 pounds. He's the same size as James Brockermeyer. He's got NFL bloodlines, just like James Brockermeyer. I really like Mysolinski's highlights. He's nasty. He's constantly driving guys 10 yards down the field and pancaking them off the whistle. Whenever Iowa and Michigan State and schools like that want a lineman and Texas can get them, in my opinion, that's a huge win. So I'm a Mysolinski fan. I like him just as much, if not more, than James Brockermeyer, if I'm being completely honest with you. I'm still an Ezra Oyatade fan. I still hope he ends 100%. Up.
100%. Yeah, why haven't they not offered that?
I don't know, because I think he can play guard. Or why not have two guys that could potentially snap, Especially right. When you hear about, Rafidi Jermaine, not necessarily doing great. I like Mysolinski. I think he's a quality pickup. I think he's better than he's rated on a lot of these sites. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him. We look up, 2020? If we look up in 2023, 2024, and he's been a multi-year starter, would not surprise me at all.
Right, and the center also has to be a guy who's smart, a guy who is football smart, having a guy who can make calls at the line. He's supposed to be the center, the guy who is connecting the left and the right side of your offensive line, especially in a inside zone type of offense. A guy who can, at the line, say, all right, this guy is Mike, this guy is Will, this guy is Sam. Watch out for the twist from, coming from whatever tech. Having a guy who has an NFL father who has learned under that, who has that type of savvy, is a guy that you want at your center position. That's probably what they're seeing out of Mysolinski, and it's hopefully what you're going to get out of him when it comes to Texas. Again, get Etzar Oyatade, put him at guard, and then if you need him at center, you have a great center. You have two great centers. The next guy Texas had commit, the guy before all this, is Gunnar Helm out of Colorado. So that's three out-of-state kids. Tight end out of Colorado. I watched a lot of his games, actually. And one thing that you look for in a player is a guy who is in on almost every play. And that's what I got out of Gunnar Helm, is a guy who is actually a blocker. He can actually block pretty well. It's not the best. He's not going to be a left tackle, but you put him up against a defensive end, and he can hold his own. He's a guy who can pass guys off. He's a guy who can go downfield and make zone blocks like a tackle. He's not going to be great at it, but he's a guy who can do it at a tight end level. Pretty much it. He's a flex tight end.
Yeah, actually, I think when I watch Helm, I think I'm going to go the other way. I see a guy that I think, you know, already being, you know, 6'4", 6'5", already kind of weighing in that 220-pound range. I think more than anything, especially compared to tight ends Texas already had committed in the class that they lost, like Landon King and Lake McCree, I think Helm is more of an inline prospect. He looks like a guy that could be 6'4", 6'5", 250 pounds. And you mentioned how well he blocks. I didn't see any film of McCree blocking on tape. We definitely didn't see that from King. He was playing pretty much wide receiver. Helm lines up at tight end next to the tackle. He blocks. He shows on film. He's an H-back leading the way. You see him lined up out wide in the red zone throwing fades to him.
Yeah. They put him out at X wide receiver quite often.
Yeah, especially in the red zone, and they threw him fades. That's exciting. And he comes from an area. Again, Gunnar Helm was being recruited hard by Iowa, who does a fantastic job with tight ends, Nebraska. He was a huge prospect in Big Ten country, and Texas got him. I like him better than both of the previous tight ends they had. I think Gunnar Helm, he's not going to be rushed when he gets here. You got Jared Wiley already. We got, what's my man, Brayden Leibrock in the wings already. He's going to have time to develop and adjust and get better and work on his craft. Again, another guy, just like Moslinski, just like Alexis, I would not be surprised to look up and see, you know, 4 or 5 years from now that he was a multi-year starter.
Yeah, and surprised that he was a three-star player.
He's a four on Rivals. But yeah.
Well, composite three.
Composite, yeah, okay.
Now, talking about composite here, Texas has a shot at two composite, at least a high four-star and a five-star composite running back in the 2021 class. I don't think it's very much of a secret anymore that they are probably leading the pack for these two players at this point. Kamara Wheaton, LJ Johnson. The whispers have gotten out. Darius, if you're Stan Drayton, who are you going after? Who are you taking from these two guys?
Well, I'm you can't go wrong. They're the top two backs in the state of Texas in the class. I really, really like LJ Johnson. I thought he made major strides from his sophomore film to his junior film. He's built like a brick house. He's a kid that's about 5'10". He's already about 205, 210 pounds. I think he's the perfect inside zone type of prospect for that type of offense and hitting it between the tackles and bouncing out wide. You know, any school would be lucky to have him, whether that be A&M or Texas or Oklahoma. But when I watch Kamara Wheaton, I see explosiveness. I see acceleration that I don't think you see every year or have the opportunity to add to your program every year, especially at the running back position. With Texas already having Bijan Robinson on campus, let's assume Keontae Ingram leaves after this season. So you got Roshan, you've got Bijan, and then if you add lightning like Kamara Wheaton to that, I just think that has a chance to be really special. So if it's up to me, if I'm Stan Drayton, I mean, you take the first one who commits, and you know you're happy. You know, as happy as can be. That's a great two-man class when you put him with Jonathan Brooks. But I think Kamara Wheaton is at a different level.
Let me go ahead and put it in a different light. If you take Kamara Wheaton, you're taking him away from Oklahoma. That's likely where he would go if he doesn't go to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
If you take LJ Johnson, you're taking him away from potentially Texas A&M. That's where he would potentially go if he didn't go to Texas. Which school would you rather take it away from? The one that you don't play or the one that you do play?
Well, it's screw A&M at all times. So I mean,
obviously, right.
But, yeah, you play Oklahoma, and, you know, they've been crying about not being able to get a running back for the last 2 years. I've seen stuff online with folks saying, oh, Bijan Robinson wanted to come to Oklahoma, but we told him we was full because it had just stupid stuff. They're dying, thirsting, starving for a running back. So to take Kamara Wheaton from them and to be the caliber player he is, that would be pretty funny. That would be hard to pass up. But it's a win-win. So it's screw Oklahoma and it's screw A&M. So whichever one, you know, Texas lands, and hey, it's recruiting. So what if 2 months from now Texas ends up landing either one of them? Wouldn't that be something? Everybody's gonna be disappointed. But yeah, as of things, the way things are looking right now, they're gonna get at least one of them. So if it's up to me, I'm taking Wheaton, not just because I think he is the special talent, but it directly affects a team that you play every year, you know, your biggest rival. And as much as I don't like A&M, I think they're going to be irrelevant anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly. I'd rather have Kamar Wheaton and harm Oklahoma's chances at getting a top-end running back in the 2021 class again without a five-star running back after they have just actually put out good running back after good running back after good running back.
Mm-hmm.
Take that, fill your stable again, have another five-star in that backfield. You have Bijan Robinson, who is that lightning player, and as Kamar Wheaton, he would probably be the guy who's in between Jonathan Brooks and Bijan Robinson in terms of size and speed. That's just a win-win, and you're starting to sell at least Stan Drayton and Brandon Harris, who has a lot to do with turning the tides for these recruitments. Brandon Harris.
He looks like your new Rashad Samples.
Yeah, exactly, and he recently put out a tweet where he's like, I learned from the best, Rashad Samples and Brian Carrington. Brian Carrington's putting out a school of recruiters. So to have another guy on campus who can do that is great. That's a plot we're going to get to later on. But to have a guy like Brandon Harris and Stan Drayton selling to these running backs that you don't want to be the bell cow. You want to be in a stable. You want to do more like Todd Gurley and Sony Michel rather than be Deontay Foreman.
Right.
We don't want to be Deontay Foreman, because look at what he's done versus look where Todd Gurley and Sony Michel are. You want to be in a stable, have a guy who is at your level even more in the backfield with you.
You want to get to the NFL with as little tread on your tires as possible.
Exactly. So that's how Texas is really selling to these players and continuing to get these five stars. We're a heavy run team, and you're going to be surrounded by guys who make sure that you aren't running on fumes when you get to the NFL. That it's a great vision that Tom Herman and Brandon Harris and Stan Drayton are selling, and it's working. It's working.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I had to, every time I call for a coach's job, they seem to turn around. It was Brick Haley, and I said, Brick Haley is, this is like my first year doing podcasting, and I was like, Brick Haley is misusing the defensive tackle talent that they had at Texas. And they did. It was like Malcolm Brown and stuff like that. I was like, screwing that up, but Brick Haley turned it around and it was awesome. Then I said Oscar Giles. Then I said Stan Drayton. So I've been wrong there. Each one of them has turned it around. So don't listen to me on that. But Stan Drayton has really turned around, and he deserves kudos for what he's done. Now let's get to the next part. Let's get to the actual team stuff here. And an interesting ruling came down this past week where the NCAA said players won't lose a year of eligibility in the 2020 season whether they opt in or out of the season. So that brings up the question of future rosters, because you have that 85 scholarship limit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Darius, how do you juggle that? How are teams going to juggle that?
Well, I think the NCAA is going to end up regretting that. I don't think they thought about the repercussions, potential repercussions of this moving forward for next season, because we're already seeing, you know, some places part of the reason they canceled the season was because of money, things like that. Part of the reason a lot of folks are playing is because of money. And a lot of these schools can't afford to pay for all these extra scholarships, especially after everything that's already happened. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is a lot of teams are still going to have an 85-man limit next year, regardless of what the NCAA says. What that means is schools with a lot of money, which will likely be the ones that are playing, you know, schools like in the Big 12 and the SEC, in the ACC this year, I could absolutely see a school like Texas, who can financially deal with it, keep all of their guys and cherry pick 5 to 8 guys from across the country on other teams. And the same thing goes for Alabama. The same thing goes. I see the rich getting richer. And I don't think that was thought about or very well thought out. I think 2021 could see some beat downs if teams come back, especially when folks are going to lose players because they can't afford to be paying for, 120 scholarships during the season when they're used to paying. Especially, like, look at a place like UNT, like, who never – don't even get to the top 85-man limit. They're usually sitting somewhere around, 70. I think it's going to further the gap between the top 20 or so teams in the country and you know, the next group from, you know, 30 through the rest. I think it's just going to widen that gap even further.
Yeah, and it's even affecting schools like Arizona, where they're losing their top two linebackers. Now, they already were going to lose Tony Fields, and he went to West Virginia. Mm-hmm. Now they're losing their second linebacker, who had 300 tackles in his time at Arizona, right? Instead of sticking there and sticking it out, is on top of the Pac-12 not playing and the Big Ten not playing, you have that and the fact that Arizona's saying, like, we don't know if we can pay for this. Schools like that where, hey, we're more of a basketball school here.
Mm-hmm.
it's schools like that that are going to, it's not just like, you know, again, the Wyomings or the UNTs or UTSA or Tulane's that are going to be affected by this. It's schools that are like Arizona or Rutgers, maybe. Schools like that potentially have the possibility of running into this. Now, I think the NCAA is still going to go ahead with doing something like this, and it's just as what comes to mind as the most common sense solution here is something like 100 scholarships allowed for 2021, and then in 2022, you have 95. 2023, 90.
Slowly get it back down to normal.
And slowly get it back down to 85 until, yeah. So that just through the general attrition that happens in college football, you're going to get back down to that 85 number.
Yeah.
That seems like the best course of action in my opinion.
I can see that. I can get on board with that. I can see that. But that's not what they're doing. So I wonder if there will be some amendments made to it later. But as of right now, yeah, I'm very interested to see how that plays out.
If there are amendments made to it later, I could definitely see a player uproar and more calls for unionization. Because then the players are going to be like, you're not telling us. We have no idea what to expect here. We don't know what we should do, what we shouldn't do. We have no representation.
I'm trying not to veer off the path because I think part of the Pac-12
not doing this year is because as soon as the unionization came up,
come out talking about we want money. Oh, it's not safe to play. Time to shut it down.
Myocarditis.
Shut it down. No, we're not safe. We got to keep the players safe. Let's just come back next year. But I'm gonna bite my tongue.
Let's go ahead and talk about players though, and specifically Texas. Now Texas is practicing. There's a schedule out for Texas. We'll probably talk about that next show, whenever that is. Right. I'm sorry that we're not doing these more often, y'all. I've been swamped personally. But next show, we'll probably talk about the schedule and what we think about Texas, because there's a new schedule out. So that means that Texas is actually practicing and they're doing full practices, full pad practices. We've seen film pot leak out of practice. We've heard things leak out about practice. And we also have our practice reports from our sources on the team. Now, according to these sources, you know, and according to what we hear and what we see, Darius, who are some guys who are standing out to you?
Without being able to see them with my own eyes, you know, you got to rely off, you know, other people and things like that. But I'm excited. You mean like just newcomers or just in general?
Just in general.
Well, one, if Jordan Whittington can stay healthy, I would really like to see him play, especially being fully transitioned to wide receiver now. Because when I saw him last spring, he was pretty much playing running back, you know, when he was a freshman. Jordan Whittington's a guy. Chris Adamora looks amazing in the pictures I've seen so far. He truly does look to be 215, almost 220 pounds. I don't know what he was doing the past 4 months, but he's been lifting weights. He's been getting his protein. He looks like the real deal. I'm excited about Chris Adamora. Wouldn't it be crazy after that, you know, that 2018 DB haul and all that excitement, a guy that comes the next year after and with no fanfare at all might end up being the best out of all of them.
From Texas.
Right, and not even from Texas. You know, you heard about Troy Omerier and, you know, how he was doing. Apparently, he was doing so well that if he kept it up for the next, you know, two weeks or so, he was going to be starting over somebody. That's incredible to me.
Myself and a lot of people were very wrong about Troy Omerier. I thought he had the body, but I wasn't quite sure if he had the route running in the hands. Boy, was I wrong. Troy Omerier, that dude was absolutely tearing it up in practice, so much so that he tore up his ACL.
Yeah, I mean, he was tough to evaluate because he was playing quarterback pretty much his entire senior year. But he had a bad showing prior to his senior year at one of those camps. I think he was a little bit overweight, you know, wasn't moving very well. So I didn't see Omeri coming in and stepping in and, you know, being a starter as a true freshman, especially not having a spring. So I'm with you 100% there. I'm also really interested to see. I have no clue who the corners are. I'm getting conflicting information. It seems like everybody's getting conflicting information. But
I think the one thing that is consistent that I've heard is Josh Thompson is going to start.
And that's crazy to me because I mean, he was a safety his first 2 years. He transitioned to corner last year. He looked okay. And then he got hurt. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's the guy that's locked in after Deshaun Jameson played the whole year. Jalen Green. That's just surprising to me, but, I'm interested to see it. I don't know if I'm excited, but I'm interested to see it. And then
I think it's more just the fact that he's one of the fastest guys on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very calmed down defense. It's a very traditional version of defense. A lot more man on man where you need more speed. And that's where Josh Thompson might be better. That's my take on that. I think that's the reason that he's the guy who's been sticking at that number one position. He's strong. He's fast. He's had to deal with guys inside. It's maybe the outside. Playing man-on-man with outside guys is a nice break.
I'm interested to see it, man. I really am. You know, I'll skip the obvious, you know, with Bijan Robinson. You know who I want to see? Especially after we got the little taste of on social media. I can't wait to see Jaquindon Jackson, who's apparently out there moving around and full go in practice with that ACL with the brace on. You saw him keep the zone read and make a cut. You saw the throw.
It was a nasty cut.
Right. With the brace. You saw the throw from the left hash all the way out to the numbers to the deep out. Like, somebody's got to play this year out of the freshman quarterbacks. To create
separation.
Yeah,
and they're also Hudson Card on the other side.
Right.
That's been just nails in where he puts that ball.
From the pictures, he looks like he's almost 200 pounds. You know, he looks different. So it's a lot of things to be excited about. I'm just hoping we can get to the season and continue it. And everyone can stay healthy. But Texas has a chance, especially with everything going on north of the Red River. I'm going to be concerned about Oklahoma State because I think they're awesome. I can't believe Chuba Hubbard and Tylan Wallace both came back. With special centers,
yeah.
I can't believe that. And Oklahoma State's got a lot of guys returning on defense, but Oklahoma's in a little bit of limbo. They have a new quarterback, even though he was highly rated.
Don't know what's happening at running back.
Right, they only have three running backs.
One of their many five stars hurt their knee.
Right, a wide receiver. You know, they've got the COVID deal going on. They've got the guy suspended from the performance enhancers because the NCAA does not test for street drugs, so it wasn't marijuana or anything like that. For you that do not know, they were cheating. If you fail the NCAA drug test. And so they got a lot going on. So Texas, if there ever be a year, you know, I hate to sound like, you know, A&M fans, this is our year, you know. But if there is a year for Texas to finally take that step, this is the year.
And of course that year is the year that it's a pandemic.
Right.
Of course.
Right. All this weird stuff going on. Baylor's got a new coach. They lost all those guys on defense. Iowa State's probably going to be pretty good.
Texas has Greg Brown in basketball. Texas has one of their best teams. Yeah. All the talent is maturing, and then there's a pandemic.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, we made it through a pandemic in 1918 with folks wearing masks in the stands. I would like to think we're a little more advanced in 2020. So, I'm hoping we can do it.
Here's another guy that you didn't mention, or two guys that you didn't mention that I've heard about. Isaiah Hookfin. He's a guy who has taken a step up he was a freshman last year. And now he seems to be a guy who is playing for starting reps. So an offensive line, you're looking for guys like seven or eight guys. I think Tom Herman talked about this last year. You're looking for seven or eight guys who you can switch in and out and have a steady rotation of guys who have played with each other and had enough practice reps to congeal, right? He's a guy who is going to get playing time and a guy who looks a lot better and a lot bigger than he did when he came in.
That's
and people
true.
Were like, he's way overrated. He got the BOMC bump, all of that stuff. He seems to be a guy who was you know, in a position that is incredibly difficult to evaluate talent-wise, a guy that they lucked out on, like they did with Sam Cosmi and like what they did with Connor Williams, where they, this is the last guy in class, we're gonna take him, and oh yeah, Andrej Kerch as well. Seems like the last guys they get in classes are the guys who end up being really good.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, I don't know that I'm super shocked. Well, I'm surprised he hooked Finn in there, but I'm also surprised it's at guard. Like you said, he was about, I'll give him 270 pounds. I've met Hook Finn before he arrived on campus as a recruit. He carries it really well. So for him to be, what, 315, listed at 315 right now, he looked like he's about 275. He's a tremendous athlete. I was wondering, you know, about his strength, because, you know, you're in there with the three techs, and even at sometimes working double teaming with the center on a one tech or a nose guard. It's a man's world in there, you know, to be 18, 19 years old. The strength is something I'm interested to see, because we even saw Ungalau getting pushed back still at times last year. And what was he, a sophomore? Or was he a redshirt freshman? But so I was
sophomore, you know, in school.
Yeah, okay. So it's I was excited. You know, I'm surprised to see that, but I would definitely, I can't, you know, it would be so cool if college could like do a pre like season scrimmage like we do in high school, just to get a taste. But yeah, Hook Finn is absolutely, I'm excited to see him too.
That's what UTEP is. So another guy that I've heard a lot of good things about is Jake Smith. I've heard that he's a guy who is coming into his own. And we saw last year that he was pretty good. And usually at that slot position in Tom Herman offenses, you do pretty well as a slot. You really do well. You saw it with Reggie Hemphill. You saw it with Devin Duvernay. Now it's Jake
Where
Smith.
Is Reggie Hemphill?
I don't know. He was really, really good, and now he's nowhere. But Jake Smith is your next guy. And he seems, by all reports, to be coming into his own and doing really well at the position. So as a sophomore, he seems to be filling the bill that he promised when he came in. That's what I'm hearing out. There's usually one or two wide receivers every year that comes out of camp and is like, wow, where'd this guy come from? From the year before and the year now. If that was going to be Troy Omerier, no, it's Jake Smith.
No, I'm expecting big things from Jake Smith. You know, he was the Gatorade National Player of the Year for a reason. He caught 6 touchdowns as a true freshman, even after getting benched for 3 games for a reason. So, no, I'm very – the world is excited about Jake Smith.
Right. And another guy, Tariq Black, in the wide receiver room, is a guy who I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot of him in film. I haven't heard a lot about him, but I see him a lot. And he seems to be doing all right and holding his own. That's kind of what you wanted out of him, was a guy who could bring some stability and some depth into that position.
I've seen bits and pieces of him from highlights at Michigan. I'm pretty interested to see what Tariq Black looks like. You know, Texas wide receiver is one of their deepest positions. And for him to, you know, be in and running with the ones and stuff already too, yeah, I hope he can stay healthy, because I know he's battled injuries the last few years, but somebody got to catch the ball. Somebody's got to step up. Colin Johnson's gone. Devin Duvernay's gone. I haven't heard as much about Brennan Eagles, Will, as folks were thinking, you know,
right,
a month ago.
And I mean, I haven't like been hearing much about him. And honestly, in the background, there's not much going on around Chris Adamora or other kind of
Chris
bigger
Adamora's
guys.
The man.
I mean, I've seen a lot of him on social media, but not much behind the scenes.
Just watch.
I mean, yeah, obviously, I don't think that's a bad thing. And that's what I'm saying about Brennan Eagles. I don't think it's a bad thing that you're not hearing about him. Like, I just think it's, people are, when we ask questions or when, you know, coaches tell us stuff, it's more stuff like, stuff that they're excited about. Like, oh man, dude, this guy, Troy Omerier, is just absolutely destroying things. Or, you know, Jake Smith, wow, he's absolutely going to be. Or Bijan Robinson, wow, this kid is eye-popping. Oh, Chris Adamora, yeah, there's nothing new there. He's really good. Brennan Eagles, yeah, he's big and he can catch the ball. That's nothing new there. Tariq Black, oh yeah, you know, he's new. Let's get our thoughts out on him. Keandre Coburn coming into his own and starting to really take control of the middle of the defensive line. That's something I've heard, is Keandre Coburn is starting to take control. But another thing I've heard is concern surrounding the second team offensive line. Yeah, you have Isaiah Hookfin, but he's almost basically a starter now. There's a lot of questions behind second team offensive line. And you've seen it in videos where Rafidi Grumai is your second team start center.
Or was. Apparently Jake Majors is getting the opportunity. But as far as the second team O-line, no, Will, I will say this in their defense, and especially not being able to have spring practices, you know where you get a lot of that stuff sorted out. If you go to anywhere, high school, college, wherever, usually when you see that second unit come in, usually those offensive lines have no clue what they're doing. So in the defense of that Texas second team O-line right now, a lot of stuff that would have been worked out or they would have had a better idea of, they didn't get to do because there wasn't a spring period. So they're going through that adjustment right now of figuring out that next three or four guys. And like you even said, Will, Herman's looking for seven guys total or eight. So they're still expecting two of those guys to be clueless on that second unit and not play anyway. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, and another thing that's kind of got me worried is the fact that that second cornerback is not figured out. It doesn't seem like it's, oh man, it's a really big battle between these two players and they're really doing well. It's more of like, yeah, we just haven't seen something from a guy that makes us think, yeah, that's the number two. And that's not what I want to hear or not what I want to see. If you're going to have a battle, it'd be more like, wow, we can't decide between these two guys or these three guys. Not, oh wow, these two guys should have been really good and now we're looking at this other guy who was maybe a year off or was okay or could be good is coming in and playing for some snaps and we're going to see if this guy can take control of it. That's what it seems more like what's happening here, and I'm not a big fan of that, especially in a wide receiver heavy conference.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I agree with that.
That's the standout players that we've seen and what we've heard about coming through. Again, I was really upset when I heard about that Troy Amarier news, the ACL. I just hope it isn't something like what happened with Tariq Black, where Tariq Black had an incredible freshman year and then all of a sudden he got injured and now he's at Texas.
You know, and we're seeing it in the NFL a little bit too. I am a little bit concerned about there being more. Amarier had a ligament, and that's part of the concern too, ligaments, but soft tissue injuries, mm-hmm. stuff like that, because, you know, again, guys didn't get to go through the spring. They had a summer period for the most part, you know. And, you know, Texas apparently had a lot of soft tissue injuries during this summer and got hopefully a lot of them out of the way.
Keontae Ingram just got off of one.
You see what I'm saying? But this is the thing. They don't usually – a lot of times that stuff lingers. I am concerned about injuries, not just for Texas, but for everybody across, you know, playing football, period. It's just another thing on top of this whole COVID deal that, you know, you're going to have to stay on top of. Bodies aren't as primed as they normally would be. That's right, why I'm pushing them to the spring. And mm-hmm. some folks, you know, dreams of going and playing in the spring and then turning back around and playing again next fall. It doesn't work, Will. It doesn't.
No, it won't.
But,
it won't.
You know, well, that's for another time.
Right. I think next week or next show, we'll get into the schedule, get into more of the team news. We'll get into some 2021 notes, hopefully. And hopefully some 2022 stuff drops. We'll see. All right. On that note, though, that has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. My man, DT, where can we find you?
Hey, y'all can find me on Twitter as well, DTERRELL05. Holla at me.
And you guys can find our stuff and more on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Our other podcasts on the Hornscast channel, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. Thank y'all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.